WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is the Big Pitcher. That's what Chris Earl calls it, the Big Pitcher. I think we're going to change the name. You know, get a pitcher of beer, listen to the show.
The Big Pitcher.
The Big Pitcher. You'll have a good time.
I mean, we already break enough FCC regulations. We might as well go all the way.
Not us. We don't get any beer.
No.
People listening at home may want some.
Yeah. Get a Big Pitcher and listen to the Big Pitcher.
There you go. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. I'm Derek Gary. She's Shea Spillane. Weather alert. If you are on the roads north of Boston right now, or if you are on the roads in the immediate Medford area, please drive carefully. There is a snow squall blowing through here right now.
Yes, we were standing outside as it arrived, actually. Don't get me wrong, it's quite pretty, but it's...
Yeah. This thing has been...
Pretty leads the way to disastrous.
This thing has been creating chaos as it has marched its way across the state. It's going to throw about an inch of snow in 20 minutes. So just be aware. It's going to be hard to see. The roads are going to get slippery almost immediately. Keep the speed down. This thing's moving through quickly.
Yeah.
It'll be over soon. But just for the next, 20 minutes to an hour, if you're anywhere in the sound of our voices, please be very, very careful
on the road. If there isn't around you right now while you listen to this, that means that you should be careful.
Yeah, and if there is no snow where you are and you're north of the Medford area, it's coming. It will be...
Beware.
Yeah, it will be in your area shortly. So,
yes.
And yeah.
It is, I mean, I would always prefer this. If you look outside and you are in our area, it is quite pretty. And I'd always prefer this to, like, the other day I was doing errands and there were just like stupid little flurries that turned into rain that turned into ice for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd always rather it at least look pretty. It's like, you're going to threaten me with a bad time. Make it enjoyable to look at.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's nice to look at, but...
Not so nice to drive in.
If you're on the roads, you don't want to, I'm not going to say pull over or anything like that, but just be aware.
Yeah, it's not blizzard territory.
It is. That's the thing. You're going to get blizzard conditions for 20 minutes.
That's what I'm saying, but it's not blizzard for the next 6 hours territory. But if you've been going 45 in a 45, maybe slow it down to 25 or 30.
Yeah. So just be aware of that. And when you see the snow start to fall, take it easy out on the highways. Visibility can drop to zero in this thing. So just be careful. That's all we're saying. Other than that, hi, Shay.
Hey, Derek.
What's going on?
A lot of things.
Yeah. Have we got show?
We do have show.
Do we have show? Did things happen in the past week?
Evidently.
Thank God for
that. That's what reading like 19,000 different news sources have told me.
Went to New York, got the Krispy Kremes, by the way.
Oh, you did. That's fantastic.
And I'm going to say this.
I have to stop you right there. Where's the one you promised me last week?
There's one in the car if you want it. I bought these on Sunday.
Well, after this, it's going to be frozen, so I'd have to like bring it home and nuke it, I actually am on board with that.
Okay. All right, fine. They're in the car. But anyway, the chocolate like ganache on top. Oh, yeah, perfect.
Sex.
The filling's amazing.
What was the filling?
Well, there's different ones. There's an Oreo. There's one that's crumbled Oreos
on top. They were like really weird.
There's one that's got raspberry
like
filling
in a good way
that Molly adored, and there's one that's got the Krispy Kreme like cream filling, which is kind of equivalent to the Dunkin' Donuts vanilla cream donut, which disappeared for a while and is now back again. It's basically cake icing stuffed into a donut, which is heaven as far as I'm concerned. High marks to the Krispy Kreme folks for the ganache and for the fillings. Their chocolate donut, not really rocking my world. That's the weak link in this.
Well, Krispy Kreme wasn't made to make a chocolate donut. When we were in high school, we used to go there just for the simple glazed. Like we would drive to the, I forget where it was, but it was definitely, we had to lie to our parents to say where we were going. It was somewhere near Foxborough, I think.
Yeah, there was.
It was like, was it in Wrentham?
There was one on Route 1 in Dedham, just past, on either, just past 128. There was one on Route 1 in Dedham. That was probably the one you were going to.
I was going to say Dedham. That's what it was.
I
knew it was somewhere that it was like first year of having our licenses, our parents would have said no if we asked.
How bad is it that I know where a donut shop that closed down 15 years ago was that isn't anywhere near my house? But I knew, but I, oh yeah.
But that just tells you how good the donuts were.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you where every Dunkin' Donuts is in the Boston area, and I don't even like donuts.
Look, you don't.
Unless they're crispy.
You don't have to know where Dunkin' Donuts is. You walk down the street, oh, there's a Dunkin' Donuts. Oh,
though
there's another Dunkin' Donuts.
I can tell you where the best Dunkin' Donuts are.
Quinky?
No, actually.
Not the old flagship?
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, if you want to go to the original, go to the original.
I've been to the original.
But the best in terms of service and quickness and accuracy is, God, I can't even think of the name of the street, but it's between Columbia Circle and Andrew Square. The one on that, I forget the name of that main drag. It might even be a continuation of Columbia Road. But I go there sometimes on my way into Boston if I take the back roads. I order, pull up to the window, boom, everything's done and perfect.
Can I tell you, I went to the Dunkin' Donuts in Montvale, Montvale Ave in Wakefield on Christmas Eve. No donuts.
That's abhorrent.
I'm like, what? What are you doing? There's no donuts.
Yeah, that's why they're dropping donuts from the name, because they need to make up for that.
Apparently, they don't have any donuts. Yeah, went to one of the ones because there's like two within like a quarter of a mile of each other in Wakefield. Went to one of the ones near my house, and they had donuts. And I'm like, good, because I want some donuts. That's why I walk into Dunkin' Donuts. When I walk into Dunkin' Donuts and there's no donuts, not only are there no donuts, there are no pastries of any kind in this store. It's Christmas Eve. And I understand your donut business might be a little bit light, but, you know, maybe somebody's going to walk in and be like, hey, the sign outside says donuts. Can you help a guy out?
Well, and if anything, if your donut business is a bit light, that should equal that you have a plethora of donuts.
Yeah.
It's just like...
They didn't even make it. They had the shades drawn over the pastry things.
It's just like my old restaurant. You know, sometimes we would run out of pears for a certain salad and have to substitute apple for a while because we didn't have pears. That wasn't because... we didn't already have a plethora of pears. It's because too many people ordered that salad. Right. That's the way it should work.
Happens.
Oh, a bunch of dummies.
Anyway, what else happens?
Lots of stuff. Actually, this touches very close to home. There is a family seeking justice in a former Quincy man's death. Quincy, represent. I read this in the Patriot Ledger the other day. The relatives of a man named Chris McCollum, who they say suffered fatal injuries when he tried to break up a fight outside a Squanum American Legion. For those of you who don't know, Squanum is, Quincy has lots of different like districts. Squanum's kind of its own little nook of Quincy. But it was literally blocks from where I grew up. They're looking for answers because he basically was trying to break up a fight. And in trying to break up a fight, ended up just getting sucker punched in the head, which led to, they must have broken his temple, something. He died pretty much instantly. There have been no arrests made in connection with his death. Police have been very tight-lipped about what happened. He was just found bleeding and unconscious around 1 a.m. on Sunday. And what's crazy about this is that, like I said, this was outside of an American Legion. There are lots of former and current police officers, people of various official statuses that hang out here. And I mean, this guy was a father, he was a coach,
Do you suspect those two realities might somehow be connected? Spillane?
Oh, absolutely.
That the police are tight-lipped and the incident took place outside an establishment frequented by police.
Well, and I think that's what bothers me the most about this is that I know this family generally, you know, Quincy, as much as we're, and it's Quincy, not Quinky or
Quinky.
Quincy, but we're, as much as we're a city and very large, it's like, you know, most people, especially if you hang out in certain neighborhoods, everyone knows each other. So I like distantly knew this guy.
Right.
I think I actually knew his twin brother better. But it's very rare. He is even whiter than I am. And I hate to say that it's rare that something like this happens in a case of a white person, but there's been so much controversy over all of this. And he was, you know, everyone that's been asked, you can, like I said, you can look up the article in the Patriot Ledger. They have the most accurate article about it. He was a very nice guy. I've known too many stories about, I remember when I was in high school, my friend Nick's brother picked up a hitchhiker just because he was one of the nicest guys ever. If the name John Rizzo rings any bells for anybody, it's because, God, I almost don't remember his name. That makes me happy. A man named Gary Sampson, who they later found to be guilty of killing like five other people.
Yes.
He picked this guy up because he just looked so desperate, and John was just such a nice guy. And Gary Sampson ended up holding him at knife point and bringing him into the woods and torturing him for days before killing him. And this is obviously a much lower degree of that, but it's always unfortunate to see that it's just like when somebody's drunk driving and they kill three people and the drunk driver gets away alive.
Yeah.
And especially it does bother me a lot that the fact that police aren't saying anything about it. Like you said, the fact that all of them hang out at the American Legion in Spahnum.
Yeah, that's not.
It's raising a lot of red flags.
Let me say, at the very least, the optics on that are poor.
Yes.
The optics on that are very poor. And I don't know what the rules are in Massachusetts, but this is a situation where I believe there's so much as one police officer in an establishment where something like this happens that results in a death, the state police should come in immediately and run the investigation. And local police is like, stay out of our way. You don't get to touch anything. You don't get to say anything. Just go home. We're in charge. We'll be in touch. Because this sort of, I'm not going to say that this is happening here because I don't know, but from what you're describing and looking at this from the outside, this sort of reeks of small town protectionism. You know, it's like everybody knows who the players are, and somebody who's prominent or somebody who's well liked could be tarnished by this, so we're all going to shut up and pretend nothing happened.
Well, and this is...
That's the optics. I'm not saying that's what's happening here. I'm saying that's right. The optics of it.
Well, and this is very much... I think this is... It's obviously something that's true in the... in the police community in general, which is like we're supposed to, the police community always very much reminds me of the army, where it's supposed to be like, number one, you look out for your own. That's the number. That's your, I forget the line from,
Thin Blue Line.
I was going to say from A Few Good Men, where they say like,
you can't handle like, the truth.
Well, no, of course everyone remembers that line, but it's like, God, country, unit. It's something like that, where it's like everything, the first thing that you actually like have individuals involved is the people that you're associated with,
yeah,
it within what you're doing. And the other movie that this actually reminds me of, which I forced my mother to watch the other night, is there's a line from The Departed that says, when I was your age, they would say you could become cops or criminals. Today, what I'm saying to you is this: when facing a loaded gun, what's the difference?
Yep.
And I think that that's perhaps true of law enforcement all over the country, but particularly true in Boston, where we're a predominantly Irish city. People are always like, Quincy's not part of Boston. Let's be frank. Every single person I knew growing up in Quincy, we're not part of Boston.
You're Boston adjacent.
We're not part of Boston in terms of like actual legal dividing lines
You're like New York.
Cities.
You're jealous and you want to be part of Boston.
No. Let me finish my point, please. Every single person I grew up with in Quincy or Milton or Dorchester or Southie.
Dorchester is part of Boston.
Yes, I'm aware. But listen, can I make my point, please? Every single person, fine. I'll leave Dorchester and Southie out of it. Every single person I grew up with in Quincy or Milton or some people from Braintree, every single one of their parents was from Dorchester or Southie. It was basically like, you made enough money to move out of the city, you move there.
Right.
The culture came with it. Even though we're not legally political dividing lines part of Boston, it's the same mentality, it's the same culture, where it's like, you don't rat on your friends.
Yeah.
You, especially if you're Irish, which we are predominantly, you don't rat on your, especially on the south side, you don't rat on your friends. You keep your mouth shut unless it's going to save you. Like, it, lots of things come into play that this looks like an exact example of.
Dirtbags with nice houses.
I mean, You said it, not me.
I don't mean that. No, I'm kidding.
You do a little bit.
Well, no. Well, it's because I'm a North Shore kid, and you know.
I was gonna say you said it, not me. I'm not allowed to say that.
I live in millionaire country. Okay, we've got. The way it goes is, people live in Hamilton and they fall on hard times and then they move to Wakefield. You know, that's...
Side note, Starbucks has the worst straws. I just spilled coffee all over my dress.
All right. So, also, locally, more bad ideas. Last week we talked about... More bad ideas for the city of Boston.
Yay.
Last week we talked about the bad idea of primary seatbelt enforcement,
which
Becky with the good hair doesn't have a problem with. But I do.
I know I have good hair, but you can't call me Becky with the good hair. So, I'm smarter than most dumb white chicks.
So maybe Shea Spillane.
Don't Beyonce on me.
Maybe you and I can agree on this. All right.
I'm so scared.
This isn't a racist policy. So you might actually.
Neither was that.
Be
Moving
opposed
on.
To. Yes, it is. Anyway.
Aye.
From the Boston Herald. The carbon-free Boston working group. Here's your first problem. Something exists called the Carbon-Free Boston Working Group. Nothing good comes from that, okay? Nothing good. The Carbon-Free Boston Working Group that Mayor Martin J. Walsh set up to combat climate change is pushing a $5 congestion fee to cut the number of cars in downtown areas, but City Hall is double-clutching on the hot-button plan. I have no idea what that sentence means at the end.
What?
The Boston Green Ribbon Commission and Boston University report unveiled Tuesday suggests charging $5, quote, for every trip made in a private vehicle that starts or ends within, end quote, downtown, Back Bay, the Seaport, and the Longwood Medical Area, among other recommendations designed to promote walking, bikes, and the T, while also targeting buildings' energy use.
They know we're one of the coldest cities in the country, right?
Quote, this amounts to $10 to $15 per day to drive within the congestion area, depending on the number of trips made. This fee is at the high end of the range of congestion fees in other major cities in the world, end quote, researchers wrote, adding that the average driver in those four areas makes an estimated 2.3 trips per day. For comparison, this is not a good comparison, London has a $14.50 daily charge for drivers traveling within the city's congestion zones. Walsh signaled he isn't ready to commit to the controversial concept just yet, and neither should he be.
No way.
Okay. So.
Are you kidding me? I already have to pay tolls.
Yeah.
Gas prices are already astronomical. I already, because of how congested Boston is, have had to make so many repairs to my stupid 2011 Corolla. Aggie, I love you. I don't mean to talk smack about you, but come on. Like, you need a new fan belt soon. Do you know how much those cost? This is ridiculous. I already take so many weird back routes that end up with me having no choice but to drive through downtown Boston.
Quote,
This is absurd. Sorry. I couldn't help it.
Quote, I have a record of leading and supporting pro-environment causes, end quote, City Councilor at Large Michael Flaherty told the Herald. Quote, but not at the sake of our working class families.
This
is overly bureaucratic. Charging $5 for people to come in and out of the city would have grave consequences. The cost of living in Boston has become unlivable for too many families and individuals. Thank you, City Councilor at Large Flaherty, for actually injecting some sanity into this.
Well,
now think about this. If you live in the city of Boston and you own a car,
you're loaded.
You're going to spend an extra $10 to $15 a day just to get around, to use your car. I don't have a problem with taxing the rich. I don't have any problem with that at all.
Yeah, if you live in those areas, totally do that.
But now, what happens to all... And the thing about it is, this doesn't affect the poor, because the poor are taking public transportation anyway. They can't afford the $42 parking garages. They can't afford the $3.75 an hour parking fees at the meters, if you can even find one. They can't afford the dollar per 10 minute cost to ride an electric scooter around the city. All right, the poor are priced out already. They're taking the T and they're putting up with it. And by the way, the MBTA in Boston, as we all know, is garbage. All right, there are 8 stops. There are 8 subway stops in the city of Boston.
Or there should be like 15.
And they run down Commonwealth Avenue. It's great if you're going to the Back Bay. Great if you're going to Fenway Park. If you're going to the Financial District or anywhere else in the city,
you're so screwed.
Good luck. Have fun walking because the T doesn't go there.
Yeah, you can get off at Cell Station and take a really, 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 really long walk in the snow in 10-degree weather.
What this does, if you go through with this, is this gives another reason for people like me who fled the city of Boston because it was getting too expensive, because the city doesn't really deliver value for what you pay. It gives all of us out in the suburbs another reason not to go to the city of Boston. And the fact that Longwood is included in this means if you go to a baseball game, you're going to get wrecked on this.
Well, and that's the thing, is that your point is exactly right.
Or if you go to the doctor. Why do you think everybody goes to Longwood? My doctor is there.
Oh, yeah.
So you go to the doctor. Oh, it's another $10 on top of the parking fees.
On top of the copay.
On top of your copay.
Well, and that's the thing, is you're exactly right in that this isn't going to so much affect the lower class. And I'm saying that financially. I'm not calling people, you know, I'm not demeaning people. I'm saying just in terms of your actual income.
The poors.
This is going to affect what used to be the middle class and is now the lower middle class, bordering on lower class.
Right.
Just because of things like this. Because of all of a sudden having tolls where there used to not be tolls. All of a sudden having meters be jacked up to 3 times what they used to be and minimized by an hour. By having parking garages jacked up to 3 times what they used to be.
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to pass this, and then in 2 years, the Boston City Council is going to be sitting around going,
We don't have any taxpayers anymore.
What happened to all the retail? Where'd all the shops in Boston, where'd all the restaurants go?
And then they'll be like, Quincy.
Why doesn't anybody come to our city anymore? Because you're charging us $10 just for the privilege of being there. Yeah. And you don't offer anything worth that.
Well, and what kills me too is, like I said, I mean, I just quit my job reluctantly. I just quit my job reluctantly in Cambridge for the exact reason that I could not find an adequate way to park there, and it was too expensive, both gas wise, traffic wise, and like I said, parking wise, to legitimize it anymore.
Right.
If this was in place, I would have declared bankruptcy by now. And this is, trust me, I'm literally broke right now because the job I was supposed to have immediately afterwards fell through. Thanks, guys. I'm not going to name you, but it's making it impossible. Like, this would make it impossible for anyone to climb up the ladder, because I have a cousin who lives in Medford and works in the Back Bay, and he drives into work every day, and he has a parking pass for the garage within his building, but this would incapacitate him.
Yeah, he's not
having to pay an extra $10 a day. You think about it, $10 a day, you work 5 days a week, that's $50 a week. That's a lot to factor into your monthly budget.
My wife quit her job working at the Boston Historical Society because it didn't pay enough to cover her MBTA
fare. Going to Boston, yeah.
The commuter rail to get to work. She's like, I can't afford to park in the city of Boston. Now, with what I make an hour, It doesn't make sense. Unless I'm working, you know, 40, 50 hours a week, I lose money on this.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to go find a job out here in the burbs. I'm like, I'm with you.
Oh, you're making me even more depressed about trying to find a grown-up job,
so,
Eric.
fortunately, Mayor Walsh seems to think this is a bunch of hooey and isn't on
Marty.
Board with this, which is good.
And I thought the main thing I liked about him was an adorable Boston accent.
But here we see another example of just how far people are willing to indulge climate change. People are willing to do anything to stop climate change until it starts costing them money. And when you start telling people, oh yeah, it's going to be $5 every time you drive in the city of Boston, they're like, you know what? Let the planet burn.
Well, yes,
I don't have the $5.
Yes and no, though. But see, that's the thing, is that it's a matter of incentive with convenience. Like, for example, the movement to charge people for bags, and if they bring Enviro bags, it's free. You spend the, what, $1, $2 that Enviro bag costs. A lot of times, if you get it with your groceries, they mark it down.
Then all your food gets contaminated with listeria and salmonella.
And you
go to the doctor.
Oh my God, you're annoying. Well, package your food properly.
There was a study done, I want to say 2 years ago now, that found the majority of reusable bags are contaminated with bacteria that will make people sick.
Are you sure this wasn't on The Onion?
No. This was an actual, legitimate Journal of Epidemiology published it, I believe. It said, people don't ever clean the bags. They just throw stuff in it. And after a couple of months, we find Listeria, we find Salmonella, we find E. coli, we find all kinds of things that are going to make you sick.
Well, that's them being morons. That's not obviously when you buy them, they're clean. My point being that... That is something that it's like, and you don't even need to use them. Like, say there are people that will go and buy one thing and ask for a bag. Today I went in Target and I bought a bottle of Windex because I needed to Windex my windshield. The guy's like, aren't you going to take a bag? They're going to think you stole it. And I said, I have my receipt in my hand. No, they're not. And I just carried the bottle of Windex out in my hand. You can do that.
Yeah.
And so having it.
That works.
Be a 10-second chart.
That works. You're getting one item. If you got like 14 groceries, it's like.
But my point being that, like, okay, you don't clean your Envirobag, that's on you. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't prevent you from. There are lots of things you can do. You can bring a backpack with you, and put everything in your backpack, and then wipe down your backpack afterwards. There's lots of options. This basically equates to zero options, especially for people who do not live near the MBTA, like myself, for example. I live in Hingham right now. That's why people asked about going into Cambridge. They were like, well, why didn't you just take the T? I said, okay, I can take the commuter rail, which costs from Hingham, I believe it's like $10. You have to pay an extra $1.50 to get onto the red line. I would have to get on the red line at South Station. It would take me 2 hours to get to work instead of an hour and a half, where I'm driving in my car, can stop at Dunkin' Donuts, things like that. And it just ended up, like, convenience versus cost didn't make any sense.
Right.
But there's lots of people, I mean, that live in the suburbs and don't have the option of the MBTA. And that their only option is to drive in and fight every day. Even and this option, is going to incapacitate them.
Even if your option is the MBTA, if you work in the financial district, good luck getting your job.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. Well, all right. Let's see. Oh, this is national. We're going national. So authorities, this almost never happens. I was very not excited because it's a very sad story, but I was relieved to hear this happened. Authorities have reported that the suspect in Saturday's Louisiana shooting has actually confessed to killing 5 people and is cooperating with police in explaining his shooting spree.
Is this the guy that wiped out his family?
Yes, Dakota Terrio. He was a suspect, and detectives say he's cooperating and confessed to stealing the murder weapon from his father before killing his mother and his father, Elizabeth and Keith Terriot. Their name is spelled weird. Who are both 50. They were at their home near Baton Rouge on Saturday when he allegedly killed them. He did not kill them immediately, though, because when authorities arrived on the scene, Keith Terriot was still alive and said that his son had shot them. So that's obviously how he became a suspect. Dakota Terrio's girlfriend, Summer Ernest, and 2 of her relatives were found dead in a home 30 miles away shortly afterwards. The other victims were her father, Billy Ernest, who was 43, and her brother, Tanner Ernest, who was 17. Terrio had been dating Summer and had lived with the Ernest for several weeks, but had recently been asked to leave the residence and never return. He was actually arrested for the killings on Sunday, about 1,000 miles away in Richmond County, Virginia, where he had family ties and was just like laying low.
So
because he expected that he had killed his mother and father instantly, so there was no way they'd be able to be like, yeah, it was Dakota.
Did he say why he did this?
That's what they're trying to figure out. He has told them all of the details about how he went about it. From what I've gathered from the research I did further into the story, even though they didn't say any official motive, it seems as though he was just tired of people casting him aside. He's the type of guy that would shoot his family, his girlfriend, and his girlfriend's family. So I gather he was worthy of being cast aside.
Angry millennial?
basically. Well, because that's, like I said, they had just recently told him, like, he had been kicked out of his parents' house, and then his girlfriend's family had just recently said, like, all right, you can't stay here either. You're clearly crazy.
Got a hold of some bad craft beer? Too much kombucha?
Yes, I'm sure it was. It's kombucha. Oh my God, you're so not a millennial. Can I make fun of you for that?
No,
if you're
going to
make
not.
Fun of me for
no,
being a millennial,
because you're drinking like fruit oil. Stop doing that.
It's not fruit oil. It's a living. Shut up.
Yeah, you know what? My beverages are not alive. Okay, I'm not.
Well, maybe that's why you're less alive, Garrett.
The meat is murder. People are drinking the kombucha, and it's like, what are you doing?
Kombucha.
Yeah, whatever it is. This is interesting because.
This almost never happens. That's why I was so fascinated by this, is they usually just staunchly are like, nope, wasn't
right.
me.
But there's a category of spree killer known as a family eradicator. And family eradicators are usually middle-aged men who they suffer a setback or they lose their job or some secret is found out or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, like that guy I was reading about recently that killed his wife and his kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to get divorced and this would have been easier.
There was one of those over the weekend, but they always kill themselves at the end of it. So this is sort of like that, but there's something else going on here. Well, you know, this is a different category of family eradicator that we're dealing with.
Well, and I mean, especially given the fact that this is what I find to be the craziest about this, is that where he was found was with family.
Yeah.
He went and just acted like he was visiting his cousins, which...
Was he planning to murder his cousins as well?
I don't think so, because, I mean, well, although I suppose he may have been, because he... Like I said, like the timeline of it, his parents were killed on Saturday, and then it seems as though the Ernests, who was his girlfriend's, who were his girlfriend's family, were found like early Sunday morning, and then he was arrested for the killings on Sunday, about 1,000 miles away. So God knows he may have planned on killing the rest of his family, but it seems to me that it would have been more. I think he's thinking about coming from a big family that...
I think he was looking for a fresh start. He's like,
I was just going to say, coming from a big family, not that I would ever... Mom and Dad, I'm not going to kill you. But coming from a big family, I know that like if I was in any sort of trouble, like my family spread pretty far. I would probably fly to Portland, Oregon and say to my cousin Paul, like, I've been here the whole time.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is probably what this kid was thinking, is just... I've been here the whole time.
Gosh, you know, things...
Notice how I didn't say Paul's last name. You have no idea who he is.
Things really don't seem to have worked out for me.
It's not Swain.
Things really don't seem to have worked out for me here in Louisiana. I'm going to go someplace else.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Virginia.
I'm going to go to Virginia. That might be better.
Pretty much right next door.
Well, I hate to say I told you so.
I really hate when you say that.
Yeah, but I called this one almost 2 years ago now. From the Las Vegas Review-Journal, a panel of experts.
Oh, yes, I saw this.
With access to troves of evidence, failed to determine why a gunman carried out the Route 91 Harvest Festival attack, the FBI announced Tuesday. The revelation smothered what many survivors saw as the last chance to better understand why the worst mass shooting in modern American history unfolded at a country music festival on the Strip. In a 3-page summary report, the agency also reiterated that gunman Stephen Paddock, 64, acted alone. Quote, throughout his life, Paddock went to great lengths to keep his thoughts private, and that extended to his final thinking about this mass murder, end quote. Active shooters rarely have a singular motive or reason for engaging in a mass homicide. Now, the Associated Press elaborated on what was in the report a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this to say. Investigators believe gunman Stephen Paddock became increasingly intolerant of stimuli as he aged and as his physical and mental health declined. Suicide after shooting at the crowd was a key aspect of his attack. Investigators say Paddock also showed minimal empathy in his life. I don't know why this... Hang on a second. This is cutting things off. Investigators say Paddock also showed minimal empathy in his life, and his decision to murder people while they were being entertained was consistent with a cruel personality and history of manipulation and duplicity. They went on to say that the fact that Paddock's father was a bank robber.
Yeah, was a bank robber.
Who had deliberately concealed his identity as a bank robber may have instilled in Stephen Paddock those abilities to keep everything that he was thinking and feeling contained within himself.
Well, and that's, I mean, if you recall, I did not totally disagree with you on the fact that they would never find a reason. But perhaps I've just matured in the last 2 years as well. But I do think that it's almost naive of the FBI ever to find one single motive for an act like this. Like, if a guy kills his girlfriend, it's pretty easy to find a single motive.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to be like, she did something to piss him off, and this is why this happened.
Yeah.
But in a situation like this, I mean, you think about, a good parallel to this is like Joe Karzianov. I can never pronounce his name. Joe Karzianov, where everyone's like, well, he did it because of like militant Islam, or he did it because of anger with the United States, or he did it to kiss up to his older brother.
That's why he did it ultimately.
But there's all these, or being influenced by his older brother. Yeah. Or there's like 19, but there's like 19 different components that come in to create this motive. And I think that in cases like this, it is the compounded is a very good word for it, which the FBI used. They said it was, everything was compounded by his desire to attain a certain degree of infamy, but compounded, taken away from that context, compounded is a good word to use, and that it was not one individual motive. It was, this happened in his life, and this happened in his life, and then this happened in his life, and then this was what was going on in his life, and then, you know,
Even then, the FBI is saying none of this adds up to a single coherent reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because there is no single coherent reason.
Their basic conclusion here is guy was a jerk.
Guy was a jerk and finally was like, here, this is going to be my final act of jerkdom.
Yeah. Yeah. He
was a jerk that had, because people can be jerks and have outside stimuli to make them better people, or have outside stimuli to make them even worse.
But the FBI report doesn't even go that far. You know, they draw this conclusion that he became intolerant of stimuli. Mm-hmm. You know, that the noise, and the smells and the sights of and the aggravation of other people was just driving him up a wall, and so he decided he was going to kill a bunch of people. But there's no underlying psychosis. There's no depression. There's no brain tumor. It's not politically motivated. It's, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to go shoot some people.
Well, it's the way that I, honestly, when this happened, I thought about this a lot, mostly just because of the amount of people that passed as a result, and just how completely, like you said, like they've had no legitimate concrete motive behind it. And it made me think, I may have mentioned this when this happened in the first place, but it made me think a lot about when I moved to LA, that was a mistake. But when I moved to LA, like all of my friends from Boston and New York were like, don't let it change you.
Yeah.
Like, don't become a word I can't say on the radio that begins with an A and ends with an E and this type of person.
Liberal?
Shut up. I was already a liberal. Left-leaning centrist. But anyways, but what I noticed from living in LA were there were people who I knew from Boston and New York who moved to LA who I always knew had this like tiny level of jerk, like the capacity to be a jerk within them. But in Boston and LA were like generally tolerable. In Boston and New York, we're generally tolerable.
Because everybody here is a jerk. I mean, that's part of how get through the day.
But everyone's like underneath, at least in my opinion, the jerkness comes from like a kind of way, not from like actually being a vapid moron.
No, there's no maliciousness behind it. It's just,
exactly.
You're in my way. Get out of my way.
It's all very truthful and very like, I always say, I'm the nicest person in the world, but don't cross me.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of jerk there is in Boston.
That's
New
also
York.
Because we got too many Irish around here, but that's something else entirely.
Don't talk about us.
I am one of you.
Sort of. But there were people, I a lot of people I knew moved to, like from here, moved to LA. And I remember watching the people who were affected by LA in such a way that it pushed, it pulled out that tiny bit that had been kind of just a morsel of their personality and just let it explode because they were exposed to this sort of atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then people like me, and I'm not trying to be pompous, like, oh my God, I'm such a better person than all of them, but I don't have whatever that is in me.
But here's the thing.
And which is why I left. But no, but my point being is that it's like, those, there are multiple people that could have that little intrinsic jerkiness in them, but then the things that happen around them and throughout their life can push them over here, push them over there.
But your typical Angelino is so laid back and passive.
No, that's, see, that's the...
They are.
No. See, that's... They act laid back and passive. They come off as that way on the surface. I lived there for 3 years as an adult.
I lived there as an adult as well, and I worked there.
Yeah, but you lived there
years
before it got really bad.
I worked in it. It's true. I know it's changed since I've been out there. But the thing about it is people from New England go out to Los Angeles, and they see how laid back everyone is about everything, and they're like, I can run this town. But, and the truth is we can, because we work 10 times harder than people from Los Angeles
do. But that's the thing, is that they're laid back on the surface. That's my point. They're laid back on the surface, but underneath there is a level of... how they're so laid back is that they're so full of themselves,
yeah,
and have this level of pomposity that makes you want to slap almost everyone you meet. You're just like, I know your hair, your boobs, and your tan is fake. Why are you acting like, hey girl, why are you fatter than me?
Yeah.
Like, ugh. But my point, I'm digressing. But my point is that I think it's a similar thing here where it's like if he had had some different sort of influences in his life, if he hadn't become a professional gambler, if he hadn't gotten involved with a woman from a different country that he felt he had to take care of, if he hadn't, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I know plenty of men who have gotten involved with women from different countries and it's been great for them. But I'm saying, like, all of these things, it's like a puzzle that pieces together that with the right formula. It's like chemistry almost.
But ultimately it comes down to guy was a jerk.
That's what I'm saying. That's my point, is he was a jerk, but he could have gone less jerky or more jerky depending on what happened in his life.
If you happen to run across...
And that is the closest you're going to get to a motive.
If you happen to run across an FBI agent somewhere at a bar or something like that.
I actually know one. I can't say his name.
You're not supposed to. But if you know an FBI agent or you run across an FBI agent, ask them what they think of Steven Paddock. And the answer they're going to give you is...
Guy was a jerk.
The answer they're going to give you is, that's what keeps us up at night.
Oh.
Because for everything that we can stop and for everything that we can anticipate, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, that we can do to stop that guy. That mm-hmm. guy who just wakes up one morning, picks up a bunch of guns, and decides, I'm going to go kill people. We've got no answer for that. And this is something that we have to live with as a society, knowing that people like that are out there and people like that are going to do things like this again.
Well, and I mean, I can understand that must be so frustrating. It's like when a mathematician can't solve an algorithm. It's like the whole point of their job is to be able to figure this out so they can create a profile so that they can prevent this from happening again. And if you can't create a profile, especially if the person in question is dead and you can't even attempt to have someone crack him, it must be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, there's nothing you're going to do other than, hey, that guy's got too many guns. Let's go see what that's about. Constitutionally, you can't do it.
Because that whole bearing arms thing.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the world. Are you ready to talk about the world, Eric?
I guess.
Well, I found this incredibly interesting. Apparently, many Afghans who have been paid to return home from Europe are having second thoughts about it upon returning home. I read an article written by NBC News. They focused in on this one man named Mohammed Farouk Niazi, and he said a wave of anxiety washed over him as his plane touched down in his homeland. He said, quote, I miss my country. recalling his mindset on the day he returned to Afghanistan after almost 3 years of trying to build a new life in Europe. "But I was feeling unsafe," end quote. He said as traffic crawled into Kabul, he worried he'd be killed in one of the regular attacks that he was so used to being carried out by militant groups in the area, including the Taliban and the Islamic State. Niazi, who's 27, is one of the thousands of Afghan migrants who've been paid to return home by the European governments. Austria actually gave him 3,100 American, the equivalent of American dollars, and a one-way ticket to Kabul. And the rest was just up to him.
Is that on a plane or a bus?
Yeah, right. That would have been a really long bus ride. More than 400,000 Afghans lodged asylum claims in Europe for the first time from 2015 through 2017, according to European Union figures. And at least a quarter of them have had this happen to
them.
And I found this story so interesting, especially, number one, he's 27 years old. So this isn't like, this is, you think he's been there for 3 years. So that means when he got to Austria, he was 24. I picture myself at age 24 being just plucked, like if I was plucked out of the U.S. and placed into Afghanistan, or I guess it would be a safer place. So plucked out of the U.S. and placed in, I don't know, Iceland.
Canada.
And trying to create a life there, and then having the government approach me and be like, hey, actually, we're going to, I guess, considering like $3,100, I'm not trying to be an American jerk, that's a lot of money for someone in Afghanistan.
That's a lot of money if you're in Afghanistan.
So like, say they approached me saying, I'll give you $15,000 if you go back to America.
Yeah.
If the country was currently war-torn and had a bunch of terrorist groups, which I guess technically that is true, but in a much less volatile and obvious way.
Yeah.
I can't say that at age 27... or even at age 32, where I am right now, that I would have rejected it. But I just pictured this poor guy's, I mean, I can't imagine going, because I've been to Austria. Austria is boring as hell.
Right.
Like it, there is, don't get me wrong, beautiful architecture, some of the coolest graffiti I've ever seen. Maybe even better versions of German food than actual Germany. But there's nothing going on.
No.
You don't. It's incredibly safe. It's incredibly easy. No, I don't want to say it's easy to live there. It's never easy to create a new life in a different country. But it's in terms of actual like walking down the street and feeling like someone's going to attack you or a bomb's going to go off. You don't feel that way.
And the Austrians, if anything, are even more humorless than the Germans, if you can imagine that.
Oh, yeah. That's why I remember just walking around like smiling at people and they just look at me like, why are you smiling at me? I was like, am I back in Boston?
Why are you smiling? What do you want?
But this story really touched me just because I tried to put myself in those shoes.
What do you think? I know what he's thinking is, you know what? You're offering me money to leave now. What's going to happen in 6 months is you're just going to say leave and you're not going to give me
the money. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say exactly. So, that's something that he probably had to consider.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, hey, take the money.
Sorry, definitely probably.
Take the money and go. But yeah, if you spent the last 3 years in Austria, the Kabul is going to be a pretty radical shift. You know, because here are things that you have in Austria that you don't have in Kabul.
Yeah.
Electricity, running water, a country that that isn't controlled over the corner by a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Kabul is still kind of, it's not as bad as it was a couple of years ago.
But it's still
from what we're hearing,
pretty bad.
It's not quite every man for himself over there, but Kabul's got problems. You know, the average American is not going to want to go live in Kabul. They're going to be like, yeah, no, this doesn't seem like a nice place.
Well, and you also have to consider, given that he took this offer and that thousands of other Afghan migrants did, how perhaps despite Austria being pretty low-key and the other, this is just where he was, a bunch of other European countries basically gave the exact same offer or higher or lower to other Afghan migrants. But you have to consider the, how do I put this diplomatically? The climate in which they were received, in that obviously if you took a look at this man, I would imagine that you would automatically assume that he is not of Austrian descent. And he is building a life from nothing in Austria.
Yeah. The Austrians generally look pretty Teutonic. So,
oh yeah,
you know.
So that's my point, is that you have to consider as well, perhaps, how, while obviously it's, in my personal opinion, from what I've learned about Kabul, I'd be terrified to go there, let alone to live there.
Why are you so thin? Eat more schnitzel.
But thinking about, perhaps weighing the pros and the cons of, okay, well, yeah, it's kind of war-torn where I grew up, but it's the culture that I know. And here I am trying to build a life in this culture that doesn't seem to accept or understand mine. And here they're going to give me $3,000 to go back to the culture I was. You know what I mean? Like, right. you can picture the pros and cons that one would weigh in their head, especially 3 years. I mean, like I said, I lived in, even though LA is part of our country, it might as well be a different planet. And I spent 3 years trying to build a life there and just felt like a foreigner and was like, I have to go back to the East Coast. This isn't going to work for me.
Yeah.
And nobody gave me money to go back. I went back willingly. Well, technically my parents helped me out. Thanks, Mom and Dad. But for the most part, it was my own volition. So you have to consider, I mean, like I said, this is at 27. This isn't saying this to a 50-year-old or even to an 18-year-old.
Well, my hope in this situation would be that the people who left Afghanistan in fear for their lives.
Yes.
Because the Taliban is running wild and the United States is fighting them and nobody wants to live in a war zone. Now the war is over.
Except psychopaths.
Now the war is over. My hope for these people would be, you've spent 3 years in Europe. You've seen what your country...
WMFO Medford.
You've seen what your country could be. You've seen what happens when you have a democracy and a republic rather than warlords who are ruling at the end of a gun.
Yeah. A literal iron fist.
You've got this young generation now that is going to come back and look around and say, holy cow, it sucks here. Well, stand and fight.
You say
change
you
it.
Want a revolution.
Change it. Do something about it. The reason your country is like that is because people are not educated and people are afraid.
Because people haven't seen the other side.
The truth is, inevitably, that power accrues to the people and not the leaders. This has been proven over and over again throughout human history. There are places that can thwart this for a very long period of time, but they cannot thwart it forever. And I think if you have a motivated young generation that comes back and says, wait a minute, why does Europe have all of this and we have nothing? Why aren't we building up industry? Why aren't we finding natural resources? Why aren't we getting more for our opium? That is the number one occupation over there, that they may decide to take matters into the, it is, but they may decide to take matters into their own hands and start building Afghanistan up and turn it into something. That has always been the promise of the United States of America. Okay, when this thing started, we were primarily a bunch of people living on farms in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we said...
The whole country looked like Nebraska.
You know what? We can be poor people living on farms ruled by the English. Yeah, you had a couple of cities with some wealthy merchants hanging around. We can spend our lives in poverty and in servitude to the English king, or we can take the country over ourselves and run it the way we think it should be run. It's turned out, 200 plus years later, to be one of the great experiments in human governance and in human history. And the promise of democracy, the promise of the United States of America, is not that you come here. It's not that you sneak across our border to get a piece of what we're doing. It's that we inspire you to stay home and be like us. Any country in the world could do what we've done. Venezuela could do it. El Salvador could do it. Look at Argentina. Argentina's a wealthy country in South America. Look at Peru. Peru's doing great.
Yeah.
Okay? If you take on the corrupt leadership and get rid of them, if you take on the drug cartels and get rid of them, you can have a nice country.
It's a matter of giving into fear, ultimately. I mean, we had... we had the advantage of having, for lack of a better way of putting it, a bunch of blowhards.
Yeah.
That were just like, no, screw all of you. This is bull.
Yeah.
Crap.
We're keeping the money for ourselves.
Yeah. Like, I don't care if you're going to be a bunch of like wussies about this. We're going to stand up and fight because this is ridiculous. Like, and I'm dropping some John Adams, some John Hancock, little Thomas J.
Yeah.
But there were people. That's what it takes, is a couple people. And I, ironically, that's how the other end gains power too, because a lot of what's happening in these countries wouldn't be happening without your Saddam Husseins, your Osama bin Ladens, your the people who wanted to stand up and be like, no, screw the way these people are doing things. This is how we're going
to
do stuff.
If you don't feel safe in Kabul, go talk to your neighbor. Your neighbor doesn't feel safe either.
Talk to your next neighbor.
The two of you, go talk to your third neighbor.
Yeah.
You get enough of you together, you can figure out a way to feel safe.
That's what my favorite song from Les Mis. I know I always sing too many show tunes on this.
Yes.
But do you hear the people sing?
Yeah.
Singing the songs of angry men.
It's WMFO Medford.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Austin 5-day forecast. Cold. Cold, kids. Temperatures tonight, 8. That's what they're giving us. 8. Oh, and by the way, if you're not downtown, it's going to be colder than that. Wind chills are going to make it feel below zero. Stay in tonight, is what I'm saying. Or, if you must go out to a nice warm bar. Tomorrow, sunny, high in the teens. Wind chills will make it feel like zero. Tomorrow night, we go into the low double digits. It will be 10 downtown, single digits out in the suburbs. Friday, we start thawing a little bit, highs in the mid-20s. Lows still in the teens on Friday night, but then on Saturday, we get back up above freezing during the day, and temperatures fall back into the mid-20s Saturday night. Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, cloudy, high of about 40 degrees, lows around freezing Sunday night. Maybe you get a little couple of snowflakes around on Sunday, but nothing serious, nothing to concern yourself with. Go out and enjoy your Super Bowl with confidence. It is WMFO Medford. It is The Big Picture. When we come back, more of what's going on in your world and our world. And don't forget, on the Towel, Mikey D, coming up 9 o'clock tonight, everything you need to know about the Boston music scene here on WMFO Medford.